Welcome to episode 83 of the Sports Geek Podcast. This week, I caught up with David McKay to talk of all things sports business and sports business models, making money out of sport, what we all need to do.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who's reading your tweets right now, Sean Callinan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. That's right. My name is Sean Callinan from Sports Geek, and I am checking the Twitter when I both record and throughout the day to see if you're listening to the podcast. Very much thank you, because if you've got this far, you actually are. You are listening to the Sports Geek podcast. Send me a tweet at Sean Callinan, either on the Twitter or on the Instagram, or Sports Geek on Twitter as well. Let me know when, where you're sharing, what episode you're sharing with, and be sure to tag in the guest that I'm chatting with on this episode this week. I caught up earlier when I was in Sydney. I caught up with Dave McKay, who works as a management consultant in the sports industry, so has a really good sense of business models, how sport is run as a business, and really validating those models and making sure that they are sustainable. One of the things that's always important in the world of sport, it's not all about what's happening on the pitch. It's also about making sure the back of the house is in order and there's enough money coming in to keep these clubs, leagues, and even whole entire sports viable. So that chat coming up soon. I'm actually recording this intro and outro and putting this podcast together in London. Made it all the way here for Seat on Tuesday, March 17. Follow the hashtag Seat London for everything. I caught up with Christine Stoffel yesterday. All planning and registrations are all locked up. Looks like it's going to be a really good crew in at Lords on Tuesday. Caught up with Todd Kaflish, who's come all the way in from the Detroit Red Wings yesterday as well, and hopefully might have a sit down and a chat with him while we're here. But first, my chat with David McKay from SPP on all things sports business and developing the right models for your business to make money. Very happy to be up here on, now it's a sunny Sydney afternoon, overlooking the Sydney Harbour Ridge, and I can see just the top of the Opera House. I'm here with a Sports Geek podcast listener and good mate of mine who's made the move up to Sydney, David McKay. Welcome to the Sports Geek podcast.
Thanks, Sean. Great to be on the pod.
Yeah. And so first of all, tell people what your role is and sort of how you got into the space.
Yeah, so I'm an associate director at Strategic Project Partners, or SPP. We're a strategy consulting firm. I lead the sports media and entertainment practice. And I'm originally a geek like yourself. So worked in IT for 10-odd years, IT consulting and outsourcing.
Yep.
A company called Atos, who do the IT for the Olympic Games.
All right.
And then
which Olympic Games?
Well, they do the contract for – they started with Salt Lake City.
Yep.
And their roots, actually, they acquired a company called Schlumberger Samer.
I won't get you to say that multiple times.
And Samer subcontracted to IBM for the delivery of the Olympic Games in Sydney 2000.
Okay.
And then now Atos have a large practice in Barcelona that covers major events. They do the FIFA World Cup. They do both Summer and Winter Olympic Games and naming sponsors for the Olympics.
Yeah, there's a real big crew. Like, and shout out to Roger Bohr in the UK. He was part of the tech team behind London, but it's a real community where they go from one and then they move to the next organising committee because they know how to run an Olympics.
That's right. It's a four-year project and they typically pack up their bags and go and spend 4 years in another country, or occasionally, if they're lucky, it's two years and they kind of flip between summer and winter and share some of the load. And business there though.
Yeah. So what's the major focus as a management consultant into the sports sector?
So my main focus is around the financial sustainability of sporting entities. So how do we move from any given Sunday, making sure that any team can win on a day, to every given Sunday, making sure that every week we have a team that turns up and is on the field and competitive, and avoiding the boom-bust cycles that often happen amongst clubs and leagues in sport.
So really looking at the business models and the rigor around them and how they can, you know, improve their processes, remove inefficiencies, get the right people into the right roles, that sort of your wheelhouse?
Yeah, that's right. From governance to senior executive management through to, you know, frontline operators and how they improve. And, you know, the interesting thing about the sport industry is that if you look at the revenue lines of most other industries, there's one or two core revenue lines. You look at sport industry, then it's a high performance talent management business. It's a retail business. It's an event management business. It's a sponsorship and media business. So it's a really a microcosm of a whole heap of other industries, all combined into one, usually on a smaller budget and with a much more public profile in terms of trying to do all that with an extremely passionate fan base that's highly demanding.
Yeah. I mean, that's you know, a great point. And I think, you know, Paul Greenberg sort of said it when we were chatting about sports. It's like you see all the fans in the stands, and you look at, you know, the social numbers and all the web traffic, all that, and everyone thinks sports is super big business, but it's not when it comes to the resourcing and the teams and the budget behind the scenes. They're still in that small medium business, but they're expected to be rolling out, you know, CRM systems that and fan engagement systems that are being done in telco land and in hospitality land, where they have got the budgets behind them, and that's part of the struggle that you try to help solve in the sports space.
Yeah, definitely, and really a lot of the focus is thinking of the longer term. So recognizing that the resources of a lot of these organisations are pretty limited, then it's not all about let's go and build everything on day one.
Yep.
It's how do we map out a longer term roadmap to success, and what can we do today? How do we take advantage of the tools available at lower costs? But how do we make sure that we're building for the long term? And that comes not just across the digital tools, but also the business processes and thoughts. So when you're looking at pricing, how do you make sure that you can build a fan base, but at the same time make sure you're building a revenue base to invest in the future? How can you make sure you're communicating consistently to the market and not become too reactive, which is always a concern in sports that, crowds aren't there, let's put things on discount. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you put on discount, then,
sets of expectation in the market that people wait for the discounted tickets, it starts a really vicious downward spiral, doesn't it?
Exactly. So helping organisations move through that. So we've helped with pricing strategies, we've helped with benchmarking of financial performance, helping leagues and clubs understand their financial structures, what drives the business moving forward. And you've got to remember that sport is probably a pretty young industry in terms of professionalism as well. So it's only in the last, 20 or so years that you would see, sport as a major business with significant money being invested. And it's still relatively small. You look at the larger leagues. So in Australia, the AFL's around about $500 million annual turnover. If you were talking manufacturing business, then, half a billion's medium-sized manufacturer in terms of turnover. So. Yep. It's always useful to consider it in that context in terms of what the expectations should be of what organisations can achieve and AFL would be probably the largest revenue in Australia, and then you move down from there. So cricket's maybe $250 million, and then down to your NRLs or and A leagues and keep going down, hockeys, et cetera, they're really working off pretty small budgets. And,
yep.
And then same when you look at the club land, most clubs would be pretty small businesses if you put them in any other industry, especially if you took the playing staff out of it.
Yep.
So once you take out all the playing staff, you know, the roster,
where a big chunk of the money goes.
Exactly, where the majority of the labour cost resides, then the rest of the business is, you know, typical Australian small business doing the best it can with limited resources.
So what is there any particular trends that you're seeing of, you know, you're projecting long-term plans and, you know, you're in that space of convincing CEOs to buy into the one to the strategy, but then to enact that strategy, you know. One of the things being, you know, pushing forward strategy is one thing to write it and set it down. You've then got to follow that path.
Yep.
Is there any particular trends or particular projects that are becoming more prevalent in, say, the last couple of years?
Well, look, we would see that there's four key planks that they would be looking at. First of all, would be laying good foundations and structures. So at the league level, that's clear rules for the league, that the clubs have some stability in which to operate. So not changing rules every year, not moving the goalposts, so that the clubs actually have a good framework in which to operate. Building brands is the next, so doing what you can to build a long-term brand rather than a boom-bust brand. And you see a lot of clubs, you know, trying to build off that authenticity over time. And then fan engagement is essential because ultimately that's your customer, right?
Yep.
That's and even if you look at the revenue base of an organisation, a sporting organisation, you know, typically you'd say it's, you know, roughly, and it definitely varies by sport, but roughly a third media deal, roughly a third sponsorship, and roughly a third from ticketing.
Yeah,
and your broadcast deal is based on your ability to sell an audience and your fans. Your sponsorship are based on your fans, and your ticketing is based on your fans. So long term, fan engagement is essential, and then the fourth plank is. Basically,
it's coming to you.
It is coming to me.
Put some thinking music.
The fourth plank is really about, and no,
it's not coming to you.
It's not coming to you.
Well, we'll come back to it. It'll come back to you. We'll come back to the fourth. You're going to Google yourself and find out what the fourth plank is. I just want to dive in on the engagement side of things, and I guess again leaning on the stuff from Paul around, you know, data and getting more information about the fan and building out that, you know, that CRM solution.
Yep.
Because like you just said, you know, to be able to sell sponsorship, you need to know who your fan is and why a sponsor needs to be involved. To increase your media rights, you need to know what fans are watching, how they're consuming your content, you know, and then obviously to sell a ticket, you know, you need to know what kind of offer and ticket you need to put to those people. So you know, the data is the core, and I really feel, and you know, I think Paul backed it up in our conversation, you know, talking about the sports fan and the sports CRM space. We're just still scratching the surface of that. There are, you know, I'm not saying that there's industry leaders in teams and leagues that are doing a really good job, but you know, everyone I'm talking to has got a data project.
Yep.
You know, we're putting a data project. We're getting a data strategy together. You know that you know. If one of the pillars you've got to do, and it's, you know, one of the big discussion points to see, it's why we have all the CRM guys there. It's like that's where everything pivots off the fan, and the more you know about them, you know, the better you are.
Yeah, definitely. And to some extent, that brings me to the fourth plank, which I do remember.
Yeah,
now.
See, that was a perfectly smooth segue.
Exactly, is collaboration. So where is it that clubs within a league can be collaborating to achieve greater? You know, the greater good and grow the overall sport. So, you know, typically, you know, it's sport. It's all about competition. It's all about beating your competitors.
Yep.
And on the field, definitely that's the case. But off the field, there's this co-reliance. So, you know, all of your A-League clubs rely on each other to build a stronger sport.
And sport is built on rivalries, and rivalries only exist if you've got two strong teams. They don't exist when there's a power club and a weak club. That does just, it doesn't happen. So it is the rising tides lift all boats.
Exactly.
You know, and from so league, the league, what if you need that?
Yeah, and where we see more success is where those leagues have managed to foster that sense of collaboration. It's not saying that they all collude together,
because
that brings antitrust issues in itself. but certainly identifying where can we all work together to grow the overall game. Where do we share data? Where do we keep it private?
Yep.
How can we share best practice?
Exactly. I think,
and the lessons about what works and what doesn't. And I know you've been involved in similar sorts of workshops.
Yep.
We've been involved in workshops in trying to encourage that collaboration across teams.
Yeah, and I think you know, if there's a model you ever wanted to copy, I think the guys at the NBA with their Teamboat, Team Marketing Business Operations Group, which is pretty much a group purely built to help facilitate that collaboration, you know, getting all the teams on a call. I heard a phrase yesterday in a marketing workshop at the World Trotting Conference. So it was effectively this same thing, a workshop of getting everyone talking about what they can do. And it was Atle from Norway, and he came up with the phrase, steal with pride, right? And that's exactly what you should be doing in interleague, you know, and amongst your clubs. It's like, if it works for the other club, you know, steal that idea, twist it a little bit, make it your own, make it for your own club. But if someone has already gone and done it really well, why wouldn't you want to adopt that and do it for your fans? And that, you know, I still have trouble sometimes, the competitive nature of on-field sometimes leaks off-field. You know, I'm a footy fan, I love my club and I hate the rival clubs and stuff like that, but, you know, when I'm in sports business mode, and you know, it makes me sound like what are the New Zealand guys, the comedians? You know, a businessman. Anyway, I'm not going to do
Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, Flight of the Conchords. Yeah, yeah. Like, but when I'm in sports business mode, like, it's not about the rivalry off the field, and you know, that collaboration that can happen, and that's where we see some of the good, you know, digital activations and the Twitter ban, to when the guys start teaming up and the fans actually do like it, and it's, you know, lifts it for both.
Yeah, definitely. That sharing of knowledge is important. The other thing with sharing of knowledge is to look cross-sectoral as well. So look outside of sports. What can you leverage? So, I mean, we work across a number of sectors and we certainly bring a lot of that knowledge from other sectors into sports. You've got the not-for-profit sector, a lot of similar challenges around CRM and how do they engage with donor bases and volunteer bases. Education has the same sorts of problems. Higher education has had a traditional model where their customers pretty much come to them and they're being disrupted. And need to find better ways of engaging with audiences and students in order to beat off other compelling propositions from MOOCs and private providers and all those sorts of things as well. So
I mean the whole outside of the industry, because like the easiest thing to do in sports is to see what other sports are doing, and that's great. Again, steal with pride. I'm gonna steal that phrase and continue to use it. But I also think, yeah, there's other industries. So what are they doing in entertainment? What are they doing in music? What are they doing in TV? You know, how are they activating? How are they engaging with fans? Then you have to put the, you know, the how can I reframe it? How can I twist that for us? That's where there's so much in, you know, content and inspiration and campaign ideas out there that you can be twisted back for your own club.
Yeah, and definitely inspiration is how you need to think of it. You know, you can't just co-opt things holus bolus and expect to achieve the same results. Or in fact, you might achieve the same results and you'll find that what they were seeking to achieve is completely different to what you were seeking to achieve.
Yeah, exactly.
So the key is to be clear about what it is that you're seeking to achieve. Go and look for examples of organisations that have managed to achieve the same thing, whether it's brand building, whether it's engagement activity, whether it's
customer service,
encouraging volunteerism, gamification, et cetera, and then making sure that you're clear on what your objectives are, and then you build and adapt that strategy accordingly.
Yep. One thing we've talked about the pro scene and, you know, the leagues and club land, but the other side of sport, you know, which you've worked in and I've worked in is the NSOs, the National Sporting Organisations that are, you know, in charge of the sport from a participation point of view and growing the sport. What are some of the challenges that they face overall?
Well, I mean, certainly determining where revenue split goes.
Yep.
So how much do you invest in participation versus elite? Attribution of audience and return on investment. So You know, the big challenge with investing money in participation is that it's a slow burn. It's it's a long payback period, and you have to be in it for the long term, because if you make, you know, half-hearted efforts and then stop and you know, spike and trough, then it won't grab, and you won't be able to convert the fan base. And
it is a fine balance, because you have organizing bodies that both, you know, running grassroots programs, but then they're also running professional leagues, and where the balance lies. And then the other one is the ones that don't have that pro league but are more, you know, Olympic based sports. It's always the battle of how much money do we, you know, assign to our super elites, and, you know, use case studies like swimming or you know, where they've got the elite athletes, and then how much do they keep in grassroots? And if they don't keep grassroots ticking over, you know, you don't produce the athletes.
Exactly. So where do you get your super elites from if you don't have people participating in the first place?
Yeah. So that's always the conundrum, and I guess that's a different sustainability problem.
Yeah,
than strictly, you know, how much money can we get in from our TV rights? So exactly. what kind of challenges are you looking in that space?
Well, a lot of it is around how do you measure benefit, and it's really about structuring the right performance metrics, making sure that your performance metrics aren't just financial. It's more of a balanced approach in terms of thinking about long-term metrics and short-term metrics. And, you know, one of the challenges generally is that the tenure in a lot of sports is pretty short at the senior executive level. So it's really making sure that boards, and there's been a lot of work around governance in the last few years to move from you know, federated and state based models to national models, and start thinking longer term about how do we grow our sport in the longer term. And that certainly helps with setting longer term strategies and then setting the structures to ensure that both participation and the elite competition are both being looked after. And you certainly see it, you know, cricket have definitely done a lot of work around encouraging participation on the back of more recent broadcast deals.
Yep.
You've got AFL creating, you know, future funds and spending a lot of time around investing in participation.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of the AFL success for mine is the, you know, the marketing and the effort that they put in, you know, almost 20 years ago into Auskick and marketing to women, like that, like you said, that long burn, that's paid off in the last 5 years.
Exactly.
You know, one, those kids are now 18, 20, 21, you know, and they're born, you know, born and bred, you know, all over footy. But they've also got the, you know, they've completely changed their both a participation mix, but also the attendee mix of, you know, getting more women to the games. If you were, you know, go back 20, 25 years, and there, you know, there wasn't many women at the game. So, you know, you do have to take that long view with some of that kind of stuff.
Definitely. And it's a balancing act, you know, even at the elite level, in terms of how do we balance meeting the needs of broadcasters who are a third of our revenue versus fans in stadiums who are a third of our revenue, and you know, we want to enhance the viewing experience for our broadcasters, but we need to enhance the in-stadium experience for our fans. And empty stadiums don't look great on TV, but if everything's so easy to watch on TV and consume, then it's a real. Looking at other sectors, retail, exactly the same sort of thing. How do we change the in-store experience?
Yep.
Rather than the in-store transaction, which is historically retail was very much about the transaction in-store. Now it's all about the experience in-store. And, you know, look at people like Apple, where the Apple store is
a destination
for experience. Yeah. It's not just about pulling people in and running the transaction. The, you know, the offshoot of creating that experience is that Apple stores are highly profitable now because people do buy in them. But initially, it was certainly all about the experience.
Mm. And I guess, you know, going back to that, you know, revenue pie that we've been talking about, it was a pie that Oscar Hugues, formerly from Barcelona, showed. Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Make that
bad mistake.
Bad mistake. Sorry, Oscar. Showing that pie of that third, you know, third TV, you know, third sponsorship, third ticketing. You know, if you're going to grow the pie, you need to start creating that that fourth piece of the pie.
Yeah.
Because those pieces are getting, you know, maximized. Like TV rights are getting to a certain point, you know, sponsorship is getting. So the opportunity is this little, you know, this little sliver that is digital. How can that be? How can that grow in revenue? And we're seeing things like, you know, the WWE rolling out, you know, over the top programming with their WWE network on the Apple TV at $9.99 a month, and then finally got the million subscribers that allows them to break even. I think that was 9 months in.
Yeah.
Like that new model of where can we get more revenue? You know, I don't think many, you know, not too many leagues and teams are ready to push away the TV money, because the TV money is going to keep coming in and still be quite attractive.
And it provides the long-term cash flow.
It does, it does. But like, how can you build out these, you know, these revenue streams and effectively make that sliver a little bit bigger?
Well, that's right. And I mean, a lot of it is about attribution. So, I mean, certainly we would see digital is not necessarily a new sliver. It's more underpinning the other three slivers.
Yep.
So it's digital is a platform that you need to be using to grow the revenues across those other three areas. Mm-hmm. You know, and we see that in activation and sponsorships. We see that in media deals, and we see it in fan engagement, both in stadium and outside the stadium.
And it is really a big part of that, the experience.
Like, exactly.
You know, it's. You know, Rob Key, who was speaking at the conference at the World Trotting Conference that I was at, is, you know, your the experience of your product is your product.
Yep.
Right? And so the way you go to the game and how you consume it, both from in you know, in real life and what you take in with your eyes and ears, as well as, you know, what how the phone in your pocket can enhance or detract, but hopefully enhance that that experience. That is your product. That's the total thing. And you know, that's currently still the, you know, how do we solve it from a stadium point of view? As you know, Wi-Fi and things have rolled in, but it's like, how can we make it, you know, a completely different experience than it was the one that is on the couch, and you know, and enhance that experience for what those people are. So, you know, we're seeing more and more of this, you know, experience, you know, pop-up shops and activations where it's, you know, you're going in and you're taking all in all these things and all the senses. That's what sport offers. We've just got to take more of that stuff and put it in the live experience of sport so you can consume it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, looking internally inside the sporting organisations, you would definitely have seen, and I've certainly seen based on our backgrounds, you know, IT went through the same journey. IT started off as it's a back office cost centre.
Yeah, the poor stepchild.
Poor stepchild, stick it under the CFO and treat it as a cost centre. And then gradually it's been turned into, well, actually IT is an enabler for the organisation to achieve competitive advantage. And digital is, well, to me, it's another form of IT. It's not necessarily something
radically new, but it's gone through the same journey.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's the perspective of a former geek, and I know that I've spoken to people who are from marketing backgrounds, and they say, "Oh, marketing was always the poor brother and never got the treatment it deserved." And
everyone's got their "woe is me."
That's right. Everyone feels they're the poor cousin.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Thank you very much for agreeing to the time to have a chat on the podcast. Always good to catch up to talk all things sport with you. Where can people find you on the Twitter and the internet if they want to send you a tweet to say hello?
So on Twitter, my handle is at DG McKay. That's M-A-C-K-A-Y. And Instagram's the same. And for email, it's david.mckay@spp.com.au.
And we'll have a link to David's, both his Twitter handle and his LinkedIn account on the show notes. We're now into the second 100 of Sports Geek podcast guests, so onwards and upwards to 200. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Sign up for the Sports Geek news at sportsgeekhq.com/SGN.
Thanks again to Dave McKay at DG McKay on the Twitter. Send him a tweet to tell him that you'd listened to the episode and you enjoyed it. And yeah, what's your take on, I guess, the different business models out there and the different challenges that are facing sports, not only from a team level. We talk a lot of this on this podcast about what happens at a team level, but also at a league level. Then the other part is the organizing bodies, the people looking after the stewardship, if I could say that, of a sport itself, and making sure people are participating in a sport and making sure the models around it are sustainable. And I think that's a real key word of a lot of the stuff that that David does with sport is making a sport sustainable. As I said in the opener, I am in London for this week. So please, if you are in London and you can't make it to seat at Lords on the 17th, please, one, follow the hashtag SeatLondon. We'll be putting out a lot of content. We might even be playing around with a little bit of meerkat action. A few people have been asking me about meerkat, my thoughts on meerkat and where it'll fit. For those of you who don't know, I'm not talking about an animal you see at the zoo, although it is one in the same. I'm talking about the Meerkat app. It's an app available on the iPhone, which is one of the reasons you haven't seen me using it because I'm an Android guy, that allows you to do live streaming directly to Twitter. And it's tune in when it's there and then. And then once you've stopped recording, it's off and it's gone. And so, you know, there's a few people jumping on board. Gary V is one that's been live meerkatting when he's recording his daily shows, that kind of thing. And there had been a few sort of sports spaces sort of looking at how they can use it. Obviously, when we're in the discussion I had with Danny Keynes back in episode way back in episode 82, video is the battleground currently for all these different platforms. So, you know, this is just another component of it, live video. And we saw just even earlier this week, Twitter acquired an app, Periscope, much in the same way they acquired Vine, hasn't even gone live, and it looks to be a pretty much a carbon copy of Meerkat. So I feel for the guys at Meerkat who have pulled out an app, getting a lot of buzz for it, and then boom, Twitter goes and buys it and to offer it natively inside Twitter. So it'll be interesting to see how that develops. It'll also be interesting to see how that develops with rights holders. You know, I spoke back in episode 81 with Matt Henry from the NRL. You know, from a rights holder point of view, there's different restrictions, especially from a broadcast point of view, what teams and leagues and organising bodies can share. So as much as you would like to do a short clip of a live meerkat of the guys as they're running out, that's most likely going to violate existing commercial broadcast agreements. Now, again, no one's going to be watching a full game on Meerkat, but again, the traditional TV and the traditional rights holders will most likely push back on this. So it will be interesting to see where teams use it and if they use it, and if they're allowed to use it. But the instant nature, you have to tune in now is the power of apps like Meerkat and Periscope. So at Seat London, if you're tuning into the Seat Conference Twitter handle, I'm pretty sure we're going to fire up Meerkat and maybe do snippets of the first parts of some of the panel sessions, and maybe I might do some Q&A via the Seat Conference Twitter handle. So you've asked me how I think it's going to go. One of my main mantras is with all of these news platforms is use the bloody platform. So rather than think, how can I use it with my team? Start using it yourselves. It doesn't matter if no one's watching. That's actually better. But it gets you to understand how the platform can be used and where it can be used. And I guess that's part of the reason why I've been Snapchatting a little bit lately to get better embedded into that tool. So you can follow me at Sean Callanan. And if you've seen my latest Snapchat story, you'll see my travels to London and also some snaps from the game at Arsenal. So you learn how to use the platform, but then also learn the subculture and what is happening behind the platform. And one of the best examples I've seen of this in understanding how big this opportunity is in these newer platforms. So I'm talking Snapchat, Vine, Instagram, is these huge, massive stars that aren't sports stars. Now, every one of you most likely would have seen Zoolander 2 with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson gatecrashing the Paris fashion show. But what you would have seen is Zoolander steal some guy's camera and walk down the runway. And that someone was Jared Jair. Now, if you're like me, and I'll put my hand up, I did not know who Jared Jair was before that. but doing a bit of investigating both on all things social and also playing around with Snapchat. He's one of these new media players and performers and talent, if you will, that's in that space with over one, you know, over a million Facebook fans, a whole bunch of people watching his Snapchat, or a whole bunch of people watching his videos on YouTube. And so he was obviously invited by the producers of Zoolander. He was giving behind-the-scenes Snapchat stories of that whole experience, and that whole and the whole Zoolander stole my photo. It was all planned. Sorry, everyone, if I'm like telling you that Santa Claus doesn't exist. But it's just a case of it looked like an awesome viral look. Zoolander's grabbed someone's phone, but he did it with a massive influencer in that millennial market. So again, if people were asking me, you know, should we use Snapchat? How should we use use these new platforms? What I would be doing is, one, getting in there and using it yourselves, figuring out how to use it, but then also keep an eye out to see if you've got some of these massive influencers on these platforms, because they will more than likely want to be involved, you know, and have Snapchats and selfies and videos with your team and talent. And that's the opportunity, I think, for sports. And then it's just a matter of sharing different snippets of content that produce that that story. And then, as with every new platform, it's a matter of every now and again just telling people, hey, guys, we're doing this on this platform. But and it's unique to this platform. So that's it. That's my take on Meerkat and Periscope and these new developing platforms. As I said, if you're in London, I've organized a bunch of meetings and catch-ups and things like that. I've got some time available. Send me an email if you're a listener, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. If you work in sports or work for a league or a team, I'd love to catch up, talk shop a little bit, see potentially how I can help you with what you're trying to do. Simply send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. I'm also trying to plan a Wednesday night meetup. So it'll be Wednesday, the 18th of March. I'll send out some tweets and I'll put some posts up on Facebook and things like that to try to get a few people around and catch up with a few people that I tweet with or don't get to meet as often as I'd like, because you're in a different part of the world. Most likely somewhere around Camden Town where I'm staying with the Seat crew. And the same goes. After Seat and after London, I'll be heading to San Francisco before heading to San Diego. If you're in that part of the world, send me an email and we'll organise a time to catch up for a beer, for a coffee, for something or other. And pretty much, yeah, do what we do, talk shop, and who knows, we might even bring the podcasting equipment and do a quick episode. That's it from me. As I said earlier in the show, you can follow me at Sean Callanan on Twitter. Please, if you're in London or in San Francisco, please drop me a line. And until then, the next podcast most likely will involve some of the highlights and some of the recaps from Seat London. So be sure to tune in, #SeatLondon. Until next episode, because I don't actually know how many episodes I'm going to be producing while I'm traveling. I might do multiple. I might bank them up. So it would be interesting to see how many, but I'm feeling that I might do more than weekly episodes as I get a fair few interviews over the next couple of weeks. So simply stay tuned. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the Sports Geek Podcast in iTunes, sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Also, Stitcher, Audio Boom, SoundCloud are also the platforms. If you could leave an iTunes review, that would be terrific. We're closing in on 60 iTunes reviews worldwide. Very much appreciative of that. And I think that's everything. The sounds of the game this week, very lucky to go to see Arsenal in action against West Ham at Emirates Stadium. And I had the sound recorder going after Arsenal scored their second goal, only to go and then score a third goal. Go you Gunners.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/sportsgeek. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Did you know Sports Geek Podcast has listeners in over 50 countries? Thank you for sharing. Thank you for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.